Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan, my pronouns are she, her, and I am delighted to share with you this interview I did with Carrie Mayer for her new historical fiction novel, The Paris Bookseller. This book is a love letter to bookstores and booksellers. It tackles censorship and feminism and queer love all wrapped up in 1920s Paris with Sylvia Beach opening the much-loved Paris bookstore Shakespeare & Company and then publishing the classic James Joyce novel Ulysses. This book is fantastic and I loved chatting with Carrie Mayer, so without further ado, please enjoy. Hi, Carrie Mayer. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. I'm so happy to have you. You're the first interview of 2022. Woo. Very exciting. Kicking it off with a fun one. Okay. Just tell us about your book. I love it. Give us the elevator pitch.
Okay. Yeah. The Paris Bookseller. It is about the American woman, Sylvia Beach, who came to Paris in 1917. And opened the original Shakespeare & Company bookstore in Paris in 1919. And it quickly became the home of the lost generation writers. You know, all those famous writers from the 20s you think of, you know, Gertrude Stein, Ernest Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, they all came to her store and some of them were very good friends of hers. And as if that wasn't enough, she also published the very first edition of James Joyce's novel Ulysses after it had been become a banned book. Mm-hmm. So that is the story.
Such a crazy story. I had no idea about any of this. Like I was reading this and I was like, I'm sorry, what? All of this is like, it's just wild. I mean, the censorship of, yes, of James Joyce. I mean, like the post office getting rid of the periodicals that his chapters were published in, just being like, I don't know, they disappeared. Super weird.
I know. Although we should always point out that it wasn't the post office, right. It was the New York Society for the Suppression of Vice, the Vice Squad, who used the post office as their instrument of censorship, you know. So these chapters of Ulysses were being serialized in an avant-garde literary journal called The Little Review. And so the copies that were going out through the mail were seized by the post office. It was sort of funny, like, as I'm researching and writing this novel, the post office was coming under fire for a totally different set of reasons.
Yeah.
In the Trump era.
Yeah.
You know, the poor post office, they just want to deliver the mail.
They're just trying to give us our mail.
I know, right?
Yeah. Oh man. So it's a novel, but it's based on true events. What drew you to the story initially and why did you want to novelize it?
Right. So I've been carrying Sylvia's story around with me for more than two decades. You know, I was an undergrad in college. I was, you know, majoring in English, mm-hmm. and the 20s were my favorite time period. I took all the classes I could that involved the 1920s, and I was especially entranced by, you know, the whole expat community in Paris during this time. And, you know, so there I was one day, 20-year-old Carrie, wandering around Telegraph Avenue, looking at the used book bins, you know, the book bins in front of the bookstores where you can buy a bargain book. And there was a used copy of Sylvia Beach's own memoir called Shakespeare & Company.
Oh, wow.
And I read the back of it and I'm like, oh, Paris in the 20s, done. So I take it home and I read it. And I'm just enthralled by her story. Like I don't remember anymore whether or not I had heard of Shakespeare & Company at that point, but it was on my radar from that point forward. And I was fascinated by this life she led in Paris with all these famous writers. And I just kind of filed it away in my mind under good to know. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, fast forward 2+ decades, and I'm thinking about what I might want to write about next after my first two historical novels. And I very quickly homed in on Sylvia Beach. And I was sort of amazed to realize that I've been carrying her story around inside of me for so long. Like, why did it take me so long to realize that she deserved her own novel? But I'm glad in many ways it was my third historical novel. Like, mm-hmm. it would have been, I think, super intimidating to write about these people in my first try at historical fiction.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this would have been a tough, like, debut.
Yeah.
Because they're such imposing figures in literature. What sort of research did you do? What did that process look like for you?
Yeah, so I was lucky in that I did get to bring kind of a whole lifetime of reading to my writing of this book. But and so and I refreshed my memory on a few books that I had read a long time ago, you know, especially Ernest Hemingway's A Movable mm-hmm. Feast. I certainly reread Sylvia's memoir very carefully. But then mostly it was nonfiction that I read. I read there's a wonderful biography of Sylvia Beach by Noelle Riley Fish called Sylvia Beach and the Lost Generation. It was published a number of years ago. And then there were also two books of nonfiction about Ulysses and the yeah. kind of the way it moved through the legal system and the sort of and the literary and legal arguments that were at stake in those trials. And I have a bibliography at the selected bibliography at the end of my book to kind of show the nonfiction books that I read. But mm-hmm. I also got to go to Paris.
Oh, I was gonna ask if you got to go.
I did. And even there's a great story associated with that trip. So this was before the world shut down in the summer of 2019.
Yep.
And so I knew I was going to spend a week there, and I knew that I wanted to stay like in the neighborhood where the original stores were. So it's, you know, it's the Left Bank. It's now a, you know, highly touristed area. So I was looking for a place to stay that would also accommodate my dear friend, Sarah from London, who's going to come and visit me for a few days. So I'm like looking around on Airbnb, getting more and more depressed that I can't afford to stay in anything larger than a postage stamp. Right. And then, you know how like these apps start showing you suggestions. So yes. I see a suggestion that says James Joyce flat. I know, right?
Stop.
I
was like, oh,
I know, click. So lo and behold, it turns out that it's this apartment that James Joyce and his family, it's probably not the apartment. I'll just like fast forward, but it's in the building where James Joyce and his family stayed in the summer of 1921. The apartment was actually owned by a French poet named Valerie Larbeau, who is also a character in my novel and a very good friend of Sylvia's. So it's an apartment that Sylvia would have visited many, many times. So I wind up corresponding with the owner of the apartment, and I'm like, I can't afford to stay there, but can I come see it?
Yeah.
So I told him who I was, and not that I'm well known or anything, but like, he was just like, well, this is so cool. You have to stay there. So he lowered his price for me.
Aww.
And so I got to stay in James Joyce flat.
That's I know. Amazing.
I know. And so there's this plaque on the side of the building saying that James Joyce had stayed there in 1921. And there's another plaque that said it was Valerie Larbeau's apartment. And it's, the building is on a little leafy courtyard that is set back from the main road in this neighborhood. And it was raining the day I got to Paris, but as soon as the weather cleared up and I was wandering around, I looked up and a block away from this, the place that I was staying, there's another plaque that says, this was Ernest Hemingway's first apartment in Paris.
Oh, how cool is that?
So I was really in it when I was, so I really felt, I mean, I didn't do any like archival research or anything when I was in Paris, but I got to soak it up. And I really wanted Paris to be like a character in the novel.
Totally.
And so staying there and being really like where these people lived and worked and ate and drank and stumbled home at 4 a.m. was great.
That's so cool. No, I totally felt while reading it, I was like, she must have visited Paris because I felt like I was in it. And I've never been to Paris, but I felt like I've been to Paris.
Oh, good. That's what we hope. That's what we
yeah.
hope.
And it definitely, I mean, Shakespeare and Company definitely like leaped to the top of my bookstore bucket list, travel, you know, list.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. How cool. I haven't even looked at my notes yet. I've just been so
Well, that's the best interviews just sound like a conversation over coffee, right?
So totally. I do have a note that, so your book is out today as we're recording
today,
this.
Yes.
Congratulations. Happy
Thank
book
you.
Birthday.
Thank you.
And did I read that it's also coinciding with the 100th anniversary of Ulysses?
So the 100th anniversary of Ulysses is officially on February 2nd of this year. So it's just a few weeks away. So this was one of my favorite scenes to get to imagine in my novel was the day that Sylvia and James Joyce could hold this book in their hands after. So no big spoilers, but like the road to publication was not a smooth one.
Right.
Not at all. And it was full of drama and complications. And so the day that they could finally like hold that book was really a big, big, big moment. And so I feel really privileged that I got to imagine that for my characters.
It's so cool. And just what cool timing to have this book coming out and we're celebrating Ulysses. And it's just like,
yes.
I just love it.
I do too. Timing. I feel really, it's funny that it was just luck that I wrote this book at this time. It wasn't planned.
Yeah, it's perfect though.
Yeah.
So obviously you're writing this sort of before the world shut down and then everything shut down. This is not your first novel. How has it changed? I mean, are you able to do like any sort of like book events besides virtual or like, will you get to do anything with Shakespeare and Company?
I don't know if I'll get to do anything with Shakespeare and Company. So, for what it's worth for listeners who are listening now, there is a current Shakespeare and Company bookstore in Paris. It is not the original, but it's very much an homage to the original. It was opened in 1951 by a different American named George Whitman. And Sylvia was actually a visitor to that store. And originally the store was called Le Mistral. It wasn't called Shakespeare and Company until the 60s. Okay. And it has its own fantastic, wonderful history. And so I just highly recommend that anyone goes there. It's really, it's a Mecca pilgrimage spot for book lovers. So I did, I actually wound up writing and revising most of this book during the pandemic.
Okay.
And I have a handful of live events. I live outside of Boston. My local indie, my local is Shakespeare and Company is called Wellesley Books.
We love Wellesley.
Yes, Wellesley Books is great. And so I'm doing a live event there tonight.
Oh, good.
A much smaller event than my previous launches because, the numbers are rising and all that stuff. But I'm also doing another live event in South Carolina and another in Florida and another in California, where I'm from, in February, and all that's on my events page and my website. And I'm also doing some virtual events that anyone, anywhere can register for.
Awesome. So, that's great. We'll put that link in the show notes so people can pop in. That's awesome. Now you were a bookseller at one point. Yes,
I was. Yes. Yes.
I mean, this book is a love letter to booksellers.
It is. I mean, you guys are really doing like God's work. You really are. Like one of my first jobs out of college, after being an English major, I graduated from college. Originally, I thought I was going to work in museums in New York. I moved to New York.
Okay.
And I work in museums for like a hot minute. And I'm like, this is not for me. I was also an art history minor. I have a great passion for visual arts. I'm not a visual artist myself, but I love to study it. Yeah. Anyway, so I wind up being a nanny and working at this independent bookstore in Brooklyn, which was not unlike the Shakespeare and Company in the 20s. The whole staff were aspiring writers. Brooklyn, this neighborhood in Brooklyn is full of accomplished writers and aspiring writers and publishing professionals. So our whole clientele were so bookish. Mm-hmm. I got to bring that experience and energy to writing about Sylvia's store in Paris in the 20s.
Yeah, I have so many lines sort of tagged in my book of just being just the feeling of like putting the right words in someone's hands. She has a whole conversation about sentences.
Yes,
putting the right sentences in the right hands. And I also was chuckling when she was lamenting doing the accounting. She's like, oh, I hate doing the accounting, because that is a refrain that if you hang out in Gibson's long enough, you'll hear someone go, oh, I don't want to do math. I'm an English major.
Yes, right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, she really was, she was not the best bookkeeper.
No.
by her own admission.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just loved it. I was reading it and I was just chuckling because I was like, yep, this is a bookseller's book. Like it's great because it's, you know, anyone who likes historical fiction, anyone who likes reading, anyone who likes, you know, just literature will love it. But also just like all of my bookseller friends are going to devour this.
Oh, I hope that's true. And, you know, yeah. I hope that it does well in independent bookstores because the people who come to independent bookstores love them.
Yeah. 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 And it is such a, you do feel like you're just hanging out in an indie bookstore while you're reading this book. Like it just has that vibe. It's, you've accomplished it very well.
Thank you. That is really the highest compliment you could possibly pay me. And thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. Of course. So I want to talk just bring the topic up of book censorship, because a huge part of this book is the censorship of Ulysses. And I just find it so interesting. There were some lines in the book where they're talking about how like, oh, you can't say anything these days. And I was like, oh, it's weird. Humans haven't changed that much.
Right.
There's always people trying to silence something else, and it has varying degrees, but I think it's an interesting topic to kind of talk about. And I didn't know if you wanted to like expound on that, if you had any kind of thoughts you wanted to share.
Yeah. So I am not a historian in the conventional sense, but because I write historical fiction, I tend to always view things through a historical lens. So it's tough for me to kind of comment on what's happening now, just because I take a lot of comfort in that long yes. view perspective. Yes. I guess no one else is seeing me make a hand movement that looks like a telescope, or that's not the right word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think what will be very interesting for all of us is to see what lasts from this period of time.
Yeah.
You know, I think Sylvia and her friends really believed that what they were doing was changing literature and changing the world. You know, when she said, I want to publish Ulysses after it had become a banned book, mm-hmm. She did it because she really believed in the book's power to change people, right?
Yeah, okay,
readers and other writers and by extension, like the world, which, mm-hmm. and there are people now who really believe that, you know, things that they are doing and saying are going to change the world. And I have no doubt that that's true. The question is like, what will last? I mean, we can't really know. Some people who are saying now that this is going to change the world are right, but time will tell.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. Yeah. No, I find it really interesting the way, because I tried to read Ulysses in college, but I was a college kid and had never read James Joyce before. And it was a tough one to jump into. Yeah. But reading this book, reading the Paris bookseller, and having Sylvia talk with such adoration of Ulysses and like describe what it did with language, right? And it, you know, just taking, it just flipped language on its head, and it flipped just literature on its head. And reading it through that lens, I was like, oh, that's really cool to think about. Because at this point, right, when I'm trying to read it and I'm 20 and it's like, it's just hard to read and it's just this old book, right? But when this was brand new, and it was coming out and it was just shaping everything, like, I just think that's really cool. And I kind of want to give it another shot now.
Well, yeah, that would be awesome. And let me know how it goes.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, everyone out there listening, like, you don't have to have read or even plan to read Ulysses to enjoy the Paris bookseller.
No, not at all.
Sylvia read it and loved it for you.
Yes. Yeah. And she describes enough of it. Like it definitely, it just, her love of it is inspiring, I guess.
That's what I hope to convey. So I'm glad that was clear.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I loved that. Yeah. It definitely had me like thinking back to the class when I was like staring at the first page, like, Okay, Joyce.
Yeah. You know, I think a much more accessible James Joyce novel is Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man.
Which, and that one I love. Yeah.
And you know, everyone loves that one. Yeah. You know, I don't know anyone. I have yet to meet someone who is obsessed with books who didn't love Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. That's and so we almost all read it as young people, as young artists ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think it just really, we just feel like we're in it with with Stephen, his main character, you know, like it's we're just in it with him.
Yeah. Books. While we're on the topic of book selling and books, what have you been reading recently? Is there anything that you want to recommend?
Oh, well, so gosh, so many books. First of all, I should say, I am a huge audiobook listener.
Yes. And
I use Libro FM.
Yes.
For those of you
sponsored
out there,
by Libro FM.
Right. So you can purchase your audiobooks on subscription through your favorite independent bookstore through Libro FM. So I tried to do that. Yay. So I have it through Wellesley Books. And essentially all my pleasure reading these days is through Libro FM. If I'm reading with my eyeballs, I am reading usually for research because I'm a very slow reader. I wish if there was a superpower I could have, it would be to read faster.
Yes.
But I'm a really slow reader. So if I'm reading with my eyeballs, it's usually for research or it's to blurb, you know, books that are coming soon. And actually, so there is a book that's coming soon that is, I think, on everyone's radar. It's, you know, Kate Quinn's The Diamond Eye, which is just absolutely terrific. That is coming soon to a bookstore near you. It's really, really, really great. But on Libro FM, one of my favorite audiobooks of the last few months has been The Gunkle by Stephen Rowley.
Okay.
Which I especially love because he read it. The author himself.
That.
So not very many audiobooks that are fiction are read by the author. And I'll be honest, I approached it with real, like, oh, are we sure we want to do this? But within minutes, I was like, go, Stephen. It is just, I don't know if he has any theater background, but he must, because he is a gifted reader. And it was just such a pleasure to listen to that book in his own voice. So that's one of my favorites of recent months. Another one that I really loved in the historical genre was The Women of Chateau Lafayette by Stephanie Dre, which I also listened to. It has three narrators for each of the three different characters who are narrating the book. And that is a tremendous epic saga that is sort of centers around Chateau Lafayette, which was the home of Gilbert Lafayette, who was America's favorite fighting Frenchman, to quote from Hamilton, who, you know, fought in the American Revolution and the French Revolution. Another one that I've read recently, now I'm going to blank because I listen to books and read books all the time. Oh, I'm listening. You know what I'm listening to right now, which is terrific, is Mrs. Everything by Jennifer Weiner. That's also, it's a great audiobook. It has two narrators and two readers. It's great.
Awesome. I love that. Yeah, I am constantly, I have an hour commute. So I listen to audiobooks in my car.
Yep.
To and from work. And we're big fans of Libro FM here. We love them a lot. They're just the best. They're the best to indie bookstores. And it's like, I know their whole team by their first names.
That's so cool. me so happy.
Totally. Yeah. No, they're an amazing, amazing company. They're an amazing group of folks. And they sponsor this podcast. They like help us out. Yeah.
I love that. That is just great to know.
We love them. Awesome. I think I could just continue gushing at you about your book, but I know that you have a busy launch day. I will let you go, but I just, I can't say enough good things about the Paris Bookseller.
Thank you.
It is fantastic. What a great story. And I can't wait to hand sell it to everyone.
Well, thank you so much for hand selling it and for having me today. I've had such a great time talking to you.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you again to Carrie Mayer for joining me on the podcast. The Paris Bookseller is available now. As we discussed during this episode, we have a lot of love for Libre FM, so this seems like the perfect time to remind you that if you've been thinking about giving Libre FM a shot and trying audiobooks that support indie bookstores like us, you can go to libro.fm/Gibson's Bookstore and use the code LAYDOWN at checkout for 3 audiobooks for the price of 1 credit. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put all those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!